Glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari. So today's reading is from Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 5. Etananavataranam. Nidhanam bijamavyayam.
Nidhanam bijamavyayam.
Yasyam saansena shubh. Yasam sena srijanante.
Yasam srijanante.
Devatiryam naradaya.
Deva.
Etat. This form.
This form.
Nana.
Nana.
Multifarious.
Multifarious.
Avataranam.
Avataranam.
Of the incarnations.
Of the incarnations.
Nidhanam.
Nidhanam.
Source.
Source.
Bijam.
Bijam.
Seed.
Seed.
Avyayam.
Avyayam.
Indestructible.
Indestructible.
Yasya.
Yasya.
Whose.
Whose.
Amsa.
Amsa.
Plenary portion.
Plenary portion.
Amsena.
Amsena.
Part of the plenary portion.
Part of the plenary portion.
Shijante.
Shijante.
Create.
Create.
Deva.
Deva.
Demigods.
Demigods.
Tiryak.
Tiryak.
Animals.
Animals.
Naradaya.
Naradaya.
Human beings and others.
Human beings and others.
Translation. This form, which is the second manifestation of the Purusha, is the source and indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations within the universe. From the particles and portions of this form, different living entities like demigods, men and others are created. Please repeat. This form, the second manifestation of the Purusha, is the source and indestructible seed.
Is the source and indestructible seed
of multifarious incarnations.
Of multifarious incarnations
within the universe.
Within the universe.
From the particles and portions of this form.
From the particles and portions of this form.
Different living entities.
Different living entities.
Like demigods, men and others.
Like demigods, men and others.
Are created.
Are created.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Purusha, after creating innumerable universes in the Mahatattva, entered in each of them as the second Purusha, Garbhadakshai Vishnu. When he saw that within the universe there was only darkness and space, without any resting place, he filled half the universe with water from his own perspiration and laid himself down on the same water. This water is called Garbhadak. And then from his navel the stem of the lotus flower sprouted, and on the flower petals, the birth of Brahma, or the master engineer of the universe, took place. Brahma became the engineer of the universe, and the Lord himself took charge of the maintenance of this universe as Vishnu. Brahma was generated from the Raja Gun of Prakriti, or the mode of passion in nature. And Vishnu became the Lord of the mode of goodness. Vishnu, being transcendental to all the modes, is always aloof from materialistic affection. This has already been explained. From Brahma there is Rudra, Lord Shiva, who is in charge of the mode of ignorance or darkness. He destroys the whole creation by the will of the Lord. Therefore all three, namely Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, are incarnations from Garbhadakshai Vishnu. So this is a very important point a relevant point in trying to understand creation from the point of view of the Vedas. Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, people are educated in a particular way, and so it's very difficult for them to actually accept the authority of the Vedas. They very readily, because they take their education as young, innocent children, they very readily accept the ideas of the materialistic authorities. But when they're asked to accept the Vedas, they think this is very extraordinary, that the Lord lies down in half the ocean, half the universe is full of water, and it comes from his perspiration. But we should stop and we should become a little thoughtful. We should think that if there is such a being as God, he must be so far beyond our conception. Because even using the equipment of the materialistic scientific authorities, they can show from their telescopes and their other machinery way out into space. And you can see an unlimited amount of different planets. And of course, because they're so knowledgeable, sitting in their room, reading a few books with a little study, they can tell you all about this planet is here, that planet is there, this one is here, that one there. But what can they really tell? Millions of planets, they look like little clusters of glitter, that you just throw glitter like that. And the planets look like that from our perception. And we think it's difficult to accept that God can do these things. But it would be very, very foolish not to accept that God can do these things. You'd have to be quite dull-brained. Because if he's the source of everything, he can do anything. Just as I can take some glitter in my hand and throw it up in the air and watch it all come down. And perhaps to the watching eye of some kind of micro-sized creature on the ground, they can see these massive particles of gold coming down on their heads and think, who has done this amazing thing? So from their relative perspective, what I'm doing, which is inconsequential, and anyone could do that, they think it is amazing. And if one of their colleagues said to them, actually, you know, that's a human being. And human beings are so big. I've read it in one of our Vedas. And then they would say, no. Human beings can't be that big. After all, I'm this big. So how can God be that big? He must be, say, he could be 100 times, 1,000,000 times greater than me. He could be even a Google greater than me. But he certainly can't be like, you know, this is all just falsity. It's a legend. Someone made it up. So this particular Bhagavatam purport is very technical, and it continues for 3 pages where Srila Prabhupada is definitely must be getting the information that he's preparing and presenting to us from the previous acharyas, who must have also commented very elaborately on this particular verse because of its importance. So we should not become lazy like the materialistic person who thinks that life is just meant for a bit of enjoyment. And today, tomorrow, who cares, it's just meant for fun. And we work 5 days, we make our money, and then we enjoy the weekend, and then we suffer back to work the following week, and life goes by week after week after week, and our children grow up, and our main focus is all on this little tiny part of reality that we know. And like the little ant, who's thinking, oh my goodness, what is this happening to me? This is going to destroy my whole sense of well-being. We should not be like that. We should be very, very serious to try to go deeper, to penetrate into the reality of what is going on beyond us. Because it's going on, whether we like it or not, whether the ant believes it or not. I am still throwing the particles of insignificant sparkle. So we should understand this beyond all the triviality that is going on in this world at the present time, and which is engaging everybody's minds in frivolous things. Beyond that is this depth of knowledge that Srila Prabhupada worked so hard to bring to the Western minds of men. And now, of course, back to the Indians who are rapidly forgetting their culture and engaging in that rat race, racing rats, trying to get some position in society, which is temporary. We all can understand that, theoretically, but still, we're totally busy running, trying to keep up with this. So we should try to withdraw our intelligence from these concerns and place ourselves in the mood of a very eager, urgent listener to what Srila Prabhupada says. Last night, I would like to have said by chance, but of course nothing happens by chance. I was just before I was about to take rest, I had a CD with me of images of Srila Prabhupada, something I had picked up when I was leaving from Perth. And wishing to ground myself after a day of dealing with the material energy, I put it on my computer, and I turned it on. And there were many, many images of Srila Prabhupada, first in India. He was doing different things. He was sitting with his hands like this at the installation of the Krishna Balaram temple, while all kinds of people were doing all kinds of ritualistic things around. Srila Prabhupada had his hands like this as part of the ritual, and they would place rupee in his hands and put it somewhere, and the Karmakandya brahmanas who were doing the puja were doing things. And he was sitting there, and he looked very thin and very grave. And then I remembered that at that time, he was severely suffering from malaria, and he had 105 fever. And yet, looking at him in this picture, if I had not known that by having read the Lilamrita, I would not have been able to picture it because of his gravity and his self-control. So having a little further knowledge into the, just not looking at the outside of the picture, but knowing this, that Srila Prabhupada was very, very sick at the time, it made me very sober, because look, here I am, I've got plenty of life and plenty of energy, and what am I doing with my energy, and where is my attention directed? So I was watching this, and it was going through many different pictures of Srila Prabhupada in different places, and all of a sudden I dozed off for a moment, and I opened my eyes, and I thought, oh, I know those people, oh, they must have all gone to Vrindavan for this particular opening of the temple. And there was three or four or five people I knew in 1975 when I was living here in Melbourne. And all of a sudden I realized, no, I know that one too, and I know that one. And I realized, oh, the video has now shifted to Melbourne. And these pictures were taken in the Melbourne temple in 1975. So there was a picture where Srila Prabhupada was doing the fire yajna. It was either to install the deities here, or it was for a marriage, because one of the ladies had dots on. And that was as much as they knew about the Vedic culture. None of the lavishness of an Indian wedding. Just she had some dots on her face, and there were some photos of some elderly people, which possibly were her parents. And Srila Prabhupada was doing the yajna. All the young faces, all the young people who all now have grey hair, wherever they are. Then there was a lecture, and Srila Prabhupada was sitting right here. And sometimes when I walk into the temple room, depending on my mood, sometimes Srila Prabhupada looks very somber. He doesn't look exactly pleased with me. And then I come in here and I stand in front of the Vyasasana and I look at Srila Prabhupada, and he doesn't seem to look pleased. And I have to do a cross-examination of my consciousness. Where am I right now? And I have to do a correction. The correction is always mine, not his. So in this mood I was looking at Srila Prabhupada speaking on the picture here, sitting right here. And at that time there were books right behind Srila Prabhupada. And here there were black curtains, because previously there were windows, and all along here had windows and not these beautiful arches, and all this was also black curtains or dark curtains right up to the altar. And Srila Prabhupada was speaking. And one young devotee, maybe looked in his early 20s, he asked a question of Srila Prabhupada. It was a simple question, and the camera went to him. Are you right? You settled? I'm sorry? Can you please organize that, and then I'll start the class from after that.
He has to bag cookies for Harina.
I know, but this is the Bhagavatam class. We have to be very, very careful. I can say this to you honestly from my own consciousness, that even when we're doing Harinam, we have to do it in the right consciousness, in the right way. I must say to you, when I came, I saw that poster up on the board, and it struck me, it was equal sized to Prabhupada's disappearance day, it was equal sized to Govardhan Puja, it was equal in size and in weight to all these other directly spiritual activities. And the thing on that poster that struck me first was the ginger beer. That if you do this Harinam, you will get something. So we have to be very careful. Because you are representing Srila Prabhupada when you do the Harinam. And if you're in a frivolous, light mood, and after the Harinam you're all going to have some fun together, then where is the purport of the Harinam? Because the Harinam is a serious thing. You go out there to glorify Krishna. You don't go out there to kind of like wiggle around and smile at the people. If you do that, then you become implicated in their consciousness. And the whole thing goes the other way. And instead of doing the Harinam and bringing them to the weighty subject matter of Krishna consciousness, you go out there and you get subtly drawn to the frivolous pleasures of the materialistic people, even though you're doing Harinam. So let me continue and tell you why I'm feeling so grave. So Srila Prabhupada was asked this question by a young man with a smile on his face, not looking very terribly serious. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, since we have had so many, many, many births with so much activity and karma that we have performed, isn't it going to take us a long time to get rid of all that karma and become purified? And it sounded like, you know, kind of a reasonable doubtful question that crops up sometimes in our minds. And Srila Prabhupada shot at him like an arrow. I've never seen such a thing. He shot at him. His eyes got angry and he looked at him and he said, 1 second. It takes 1 second. Have you been reading your Bhagavad Gita? It takes 1 second. In 1 second, all the karma can be removed if you surrender fully to Krishna. With full sincerity in 1 second. And then Prabhupada, if you should all see this, in fact you should have it here available for people to see Srila Prabhupada on the Vyasasan so they can understand the weight of his message and not just think of him as somebody who you do some kind of a ritualistic activity for and then you go about your day in the same kind of consciousness as you would have been in if you hadn't come in and done your little bit of puja. You have to change your consciousness. Now, please excuse me, I should not be saying this to you and I'm not intending to, I'm actually trying to say it to myself. I have to change my consciousness. 1 second it takes. And then I was looking at Srila Prabhupada and he does this thing with his eyes, that his eyes seem to like jump forward. And he looked at the man, a young devotee, not even a bad man, and he was saying to him, 1 second of sincere service, surrender. You don't know this? And then he sort of became very grave again. And I sat there looking at this and I'm going to have to give Bhagavatam class in the morning. And here I have just witnessed Srila Prabhupada's gravity. The next section was Srila Prabhupada up in his room. And there Srila Prabhupada was sitting, animated, you could say. Why don't we just get an animated deity, an automatic, you know, something that they can cleverly devise nowadays. And then we can just go up there and look at him and go about our day. No, he was actually sitting there. He was putting on tilak. He was answering a letter. The globe was there. The picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was there. He was there. So I felt as though this is a very important thing to share with you all. That you, some people are coming here as guests for the first time, second time, or regular guests. Some people are more seriously committed to maintenance of this temple. You should never forget it is Prabhupada's temple. It is Prabhupada's temple. It is Prabhupada's Bhagavatam class. Don't be careless with these things. Don't have some other priority, even if it appears to be preaching. The preaching has to generate like a funnel, bring people, even if it's not everyone. It should bring those who are sincere enough down towards this very grave subject matter of the Bhagavatam. If it doesn't do that, then you can fill this place with so many people. But what is the gain? Yesterday I went to a shop. It was a big shop and it was full of people. And I was doing something, I was trying on some clothes, and I heard a conversation between two of the girls who worked in the shop. And one of the girls was complaining about the way the shop was laid out. The area where people were trying on their clothes was too congested. And she was talking to the other one, and it was funny, she was saying, this place is so full of people. It's just oppressive. There's no room, there's so many people, I'm sure it's unhealthy. And she was just talking about a shop. So we don't want the temple to become unhealthy. Full of people, but they're not changing. They're not accepting this Vedic point of view. We must make sure this message is in the foreground of our own thinking when we're trying to bring other people. Therefore, the Bhagavatam class is for us to regenerate, to refocus, to re-establish our center in the truth. And then when we go out, we have things in the right perspective. So that when you go today on Harinam, you don't go for the ginger beer, which is right in the middle. You go for the glorification of the Lord, for the Lord's own pleasure, and nothing else. And then your Harinam is meaningful. Otherwise, it's just an outing for the family, for the friends, to bond, to get together. Everyone does that. Every church in this whole place does that. So you can do that too, but that won't please Srila Prabhupada, I can assure you. After seeing that last night, that won't please Srila Prabhupada. He doesn't want that. He said, one moon, not so many stars. So try to become moon-like, not star-like. Don't hear the philosophy in the morning as a ritualistic part of my day and walk straight out the door, and after breakfast I think and act just like everybody else in the material race for prosperity, success, name, mortgage, economic gain, and so on and so forth. We should feel rather that I am just walking through this world. I have to rub shoulders with the people of this world. I have to live somewhere. I have to take care of a family somewhere. But this is not my priority. This is my field of service. And this service that I'm doing in this way must be pleasing to Him, because I'm representing Him, and I do not want to turn this temple into a social event. A place where every Indian likes to come, no Westerners like to come, because there's too many Indians here doing social activities. It should not be like that. It should be that when people come in here, they see the seriousness of Indians and Westerners alike trying to give Srila Prabhupada's message to the whole world. Please do that. Let me continue. From Brahma and the other demigods, Daksha, Marichi, and Manu, and many others become incarnated to generate living entities within the universe. This Garbhadaksha Vishnu is glorified in the Vedas in the hymns of the Garbha Stuti, which begins with the description of the Lord as having thousands of heads, etc. The Garbhadaksha Vishnu is the Lord of the universe, and although he appears to be lying within the universe, he is always transcendental. This also has already been explained. The Vishnu, who is the plenary portion of Gavadakshay Vishnu, is the supersoul of the universal life, and he is known as the maintainer of the universe, or Kiridakshay Vishnu. So the three features of the original Purusha are thus understood. Did we understand them? Who is the first one? Karanadakshay Vishnu. And what do we need to understand about him? What have we heard and understood about Karanadakshay Vishnu?
From him comes.
What else comes from him? Before Gavadakshay Vishnu, what else comes from? Different universes. And how long does that universe stay in operation? He's breathing out a universe. The universes are created. He's breathing in. The universes are destroyed. So that sounds like God. To tell you the truth, that sounds like God. Somebody that you can't conceive of, somebody that who's so great, who's greater and greater and greater than everything, has to be God. And he cannot come under the rules of his creation any more than when I drop the little particles of gold down here, I feel any inconvenience in my hand. If you feel some inconvenience in doing it, that's not God. You'll have to go back further. You'll have to take your studies further back. Because to him, it's as unimportant as breathing out and breathing in, breathing out and breathing in. And so do you get some perspective of our size? This is a universe we're talking about. It's like just a particle. You know, there's atomic filaments in the air. Sometimes you see the sunshine and you see it's full of little pieces of atomic particles. Well, that's how big the universes are. And when we look from the NATO, you know, the very intelligent scientists with their magnifying glasses up in the air, they can show you just like the sprinklings of planets and planets and planets. That's our perspective of the universe. Massive, inconceivable. The universe is inconceivable. And to him, it's breathing in and breathing out, breathing in and breathing out. So this is the person that Prabhupada is saying, in 1 second you can get out of this material world. In 1 second. You can be finished with it all. And that means that we don't want to get out of the material world, or we would be out of here already. And that, we have to say, is our misfortune. Because we're a little more unfortunate than the people out there who are very unfortunate, because we know something already, but we become bland. We become like chili that has no hot heat, or salt that has no saltiness. So this is our duty, to remember this. We are being given this class. We are to take this very seriously, to understand. This is the person who I'm serving. Not you, silly people. You're all like children, doing mischief, malpractices. I'm not serving you. I'm serving him by dealing with you. This is the proper perspective and understanding. So I'll continue a little further. In different millennia, there are different incarnations and they are innumerable. In different millennia, there are different incarnations and they are innumerable. You can't count them. Now we're coming down from the person who has the universes coming out of this, the pores of their skin. They last, they're breathing, and then they come back into them again. And then we go from there into the universe, were we to have our, you know, wonderful technological presentational skills. We would then enter into one of those universes, and within that universe, we would discover that half that universe is full of water, and resting on that water is this Gavadakshay Vishnu. And he enters into each of... This is all coming from one personality, Krishna. This is like the, you know, the pyramid of power. This is how it comes down. And everyone, that means us, them, whoever the them may be, and everything inert, which is everything, Because inert means earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. Those are the material elements. And then there are all the jivas. And then there's God. Everything is part of Him. There's nothing outside of His creation. We're part of Him. What can we do if He doesn't give us the ability to do it? So what great forgetfulness, what great power there is in this Maya Shakti, that it can illusion everyone into thinking, I'm me, you're you, I'm doing this, you're doing that, I want this for me, you can have that for you, and we totally forget Him. What power He has to have a Shakti that can do that to us. Even though the Shakti belongs to Him, we belong to Him, He belongs to Him, the whole thing, the whole show is actually coming from Krishna. Please, all of us, try to remember that or meditate on that. It will help us so much if we do. Lord Vishnu is not different from the personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is in the marginal position between the personality of Godhead and the living entities or jiva. Lord Brahma is always a jiva tattva. The highest pious living being, or the greatest devotee of the Lord, is empowered with the potency of the Lord for creation, and he is called Brahma. His power is like the power of the sun reflected in valuable stones and jewels. The sparkle that we see in anything that sparkles, even my gold sparkle, it sparkles. Why does it sparkle? It's reflecting light. It's reflecting light from here. And the Bhagavatam says that the light that's reflected in the electricity is a manifestation of the sun. And the sun is reflecting light from the Brahmajyoti. And this reflected light is coming to us, and is reflected in all the things that we see that sparkle. So we can think, I'm looking at a jewel and it's sparkling so beautifully and so valuable because it looks so nice, but that sparkle that's so beautiful in that jewel, that's a reflection of Krishna. That's the light of Krishna there. So he appears in all these different personalities. His power comes in that way. When there is no such living being to take charge of the post of Brahma, the Lord himself becomes a Brahma and takes charge of the post. He can do it as well. So he doesn't need us. Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living being. He is the plenary portion of the Lord. But because Lord Shiva is in direct touch with the material nature, because Lord Shiva enters into this material world, so therefore there's a slight touch. Not that he's impure or anything, but he becomes in a distinct category. His category changes because he has access, enters into, and performs a function within the material world. He is not exactly in the same transcendental position as Lord Vishnu. The difference is mentioned is like milk and curd. Curd is nothing but milk, but it cannot be used in the place of milk. They're different. Then comes the Manus. Within one day's duration of the life of Lord Brahma, which is calculated by our solar years. Now this was also in the particular class, interestingly enough, that Srila Prabhupada was giving here. Somebody must have asked a question, and Srila Prabhupada was answering by getting them, the devotees, to calculate the lifespan of Brahma. And he was asking, so how, what is that in your Australian language? He said, in American it is, English it is, and he was making some joke, and the devotees were laughing as they tried to put all the zeros on the end of this incalculably long time in the billions and the billions of years. So here it explains all of these things are given for us so that we can also have a scientific understanding. And our scientific understanding may not be accepted by the so-called authorities in scientific knowledge. But that's all right, because our science is based on the truth. And theirs is based on analysis using their imperfect faculties. And so you'll be sure that they'll change their absolute authoritative statements regularly. As they upgrade their equipment, as they become more intelligent, they will adjust and change. But we will not adjust and change, because ours is coming down through a line of authority. The next incarnation are the Manus. Within 1 day's duration of Brahma, there are 14 Manus. Therefore, there are 420 Manus in a month for Lord Brahma, and 5,040 Manus come every year of Lord Brahma's life. He lives for 100 years, and therefore there are 504,000 Manus in the duration of Brahma's life. 504,000 Manus, and there are innumerable, uncountable universes, like a bag of mustard seed. Have you ever counted a bag of mustard seeds in the kitchen? Somebody says, can you tell me how many mustard seeds are in there? So it would be almost impossible. So like that, there are so many universes, so many Manus. There are innumerable universes with one Brahma in each of them, and all of them are created and annihilated during the breathing time of this Purusha. Therefore, one can simply imagine how many millions of Manus there are during one breath of this Purusha. The Manus who are prominent within this universe are as follows. Yajna comes as Swayambhuva Manu, Vibhu as Swarochika Manu, Satyasen as Uttama Manu, Hari as Tamasa Manu, Vaikunta as Raivata Manu, Ajit as Chakshusha Manu, Vamana as Vaivashvatu Manu. The present age is under this Vaivashvatu Manu. Sarvabhoma as Sarvani Manu, Rishab as Daksha Sarvani Manu, Vishvakshena as Brahma Sarvani Manu, Dharmashetu as Dharma Sarvani Manu, Sudama as Rudra Sarvani Manu, Yogeshwar as Deva Sarvani Manu, and Brihadbanu as Indra Sarvani Manu. These are the names of one set of 14 Manus covering 4,300 million solar years as described. So how exact? And sometimes we think, oh, it's so exact because it's a story. You know, in stories you say, once there were three bears and one bear was 5 foot tall. And you go, okay, we just made that up. And the next bear was 3 foot tall and the little one was 1 foot tall. And they all lived together happily in a house made of straw. And we just take it like that. But we shouldn't do that. We should take the Bhagavatam seriously. Then there are the Yuga avatars, or the incarnations of the millennia. The Yugas are known as Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. The incarnations of each Yuga are of different colors. The colors are, does anyone know? First color? White. Second color? Red. Third color, black, and the fourth color is yellow. In the Dwapara Yuga, Lord Krishna in black color appeared, and in Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya in yellow color appeared. So all the incarnations of the Lord are mentioned in the revealed scriptures. There is no scope for an imposter to become an incarnation. There is no scope for somebody to say, I am God. If you actually assimilate this knowledge regularly, now assimilation doesn't mean memorization. I will use another human experience that I had. I went to one doctor, and the doctor helped me with some chronic back problem that I had. And the doctor told me, from now on, every day, do this exercise and you won't have the problem again. It won't reoccur. So I thought, that's easy enough. And they said to me, but do it 3 times. 3 times. That sounds easy enough. But you try it. It's difficult. Because right when you're about to do it, the phone rings, and then something else happens, and you think, oops, I didn't do it. And then before long, you start thinking, oh no, I did it only 2 times today. But it seemed to be all right. Maybe 2 times is enough. And then before you know it, you're thinking something else happens. You think, 1 time probably would be good. Just maintaining, because I'm pretty good now. I don't have that pain anymore. So it was very interesting. The moment between the pain and the freedom from the pain was so powerful. And after the freedom from the pain occurred, then I took it for granted again. And I was unwilling, mentally lazy, unwilling to do these three exercises. Each one took about 1 minute, 2 minutes. But being asked 3 minutes a day for your own well-being, for maintaining something that you were just so grateful to receive, do this. But gradually we become not very serious about this. So I was thinking to myself, the moment between, for those of us who joined Krishna consciousness as mature adults, the moment between our joining and non-joining, oftentimes we had some distress. And so our joining meant that we felt some relief. And we were so happy at that time. We would jump up and down in the kirtan, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, and we'd be so enthusiastic and we'd do anything we were told. And we'd come to the temple, so eager to come to the temple. But now, oh, it's such a headache. It's so difficult. And it, you know, I just had to push myself. And I don't get much from it anymore. I got so much back then. Maybe it's the devotees have not so enthusiastic anymore. You know, it's maybe the deities are not sort of radiating mercy upon me. So anyway, I try my best. And it's really, really hard for me to keep up my exercise, which I sometimes made a commitment for. But it's so hard to keep it up. Because it's every day. And I feel like I'm okay. And I'm kind of happy. And I don't have any of those problems anymore. And I'm actually fitting in better to the world. And so I thank you. Thank you. I feel good now. So then we've got everything back the front. Because it's our life. But it's meant to be used in service to please another person. But we're taking from them and saying, thank you, you're helping my life. I'm so grateful. For a while I remember, I'm grateful. When I forget, please just know that I was once grateful. Thank you. But this isn't the way we can maintain our Krishna consciousness. We have to regularly go back and pick it up and refocus it and say, what am I doing? I'm such a nonsense. I can do much more than this. If I just remember for a moment what I have been saved from, instead of looking out the window of the temple thinking of all the fun things people outside are doing and thinking I'm missing out and I've made a big sacrifice, if I could only turn that telescope round the other way, I would be able to see far into the future and see how much I have been saved from. And then maybe my practices would have a little more life, I would generate a little more enthusiasm, and I would feel a little more serious about what I've been given there. So there are all these yuga avatars, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. And the incarnations, we've given the color of them, and Lord Chaitanya is in the yellow color. So all the incarnations of the Lord are mentioned in the revealed scriptures. There is no scope for an imposter to become an incarnation, for an incarnation must be mentioned in the Shastras. An incarnation does not declare himself to be an incarnation of the Lord, but great sages agree by the symptoms mentioned in the revealed scriptures. The features of the incarnation and the particular type of mission which he has to execute are mentioned in the revealed scriptures. Apart from the direct incarnations, now here we go, we're coming down the list, gradually you come to us. Apart from the direct incarnations, there are innumerable empowered incarnations. They are also mentioned in the revealed scriptures. Such incarnations are directly as well as indirectly empowered. When they are directly empowered, they are called incarnations. But when they are indirectly empowered, they are called vibhutis. So this is very interesting. You know the chapter in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Vibhuti Yoga. Because Bhagavad Gita is about yoga, right? Yoga means to reconnect. To reconnect. So in the Vibhuti Yoga, we're given a way to see the world and see Krishna indirectly. When we look at the sun, we have to train ourselves. That's Krishna's eye. I heard it in the Bhagavatam one day. When we see the moon, we think the beauty of the moon, that's because that's Krishna's energy that belongs to Krishna. You see the beautiful ocean when it's high waves and you think this power, that's Krishna's. They're Krishna's. And in that sense they're Krishna. But we're not going to say, oh, that is Krishna, Krishna is the ocean, Krishna is the moon, so let me, he's that and I'm this. No. We see this is his, so therefore in that sense it is him, the Vibhuti. So please read Vibhuti Yoga, chapter 10, and remember these things. This is the way you see Krishna in this world. Directly empowered incarnations are the Kumaras, Narada, Prithu, Shesha, Ananta Shesha, etc. As far as the Vibhutis are concerned, they are very explicitly detailed in the Bhagavad Gita in the Vibhuti Yoga chapter. And for all these different types of incarnations, all of this, which is now encompassing everything, all of this, the fountainhead, do you know what a fountainhead means? A fountainhead? Have you ever seen a fountain? And a fountain has one place where all the water comes out of. It's called the fountainhead. From that head place, the water comes up and it goes down again. It's all coming from there. So Krishna, the fountainhead is Garbhadakshay Vishnu within the universe. And there's a Garbhadakshay Vishnu within each universe performing this function. And then we will hear more. But this is the end of a very lengthy technical purport. So thank you very much for listening so carefully and allowing me to share with you my thoughts on both the serious nature of our Krishna consciousness and what we have to achieve in this world, and also the serious nature of assimilating this knowledge as fact, not as some sort of mythology, and not as something made up, and not as something that's irrelevant to the day and age in which we live. And finally, I will share with you, also I was reading in the Bhagavatam, there's one section in the 10th canto called the Description of Autumn. Has anyone read that recently? In the chapter called Description of Autumn, Sukadev Goswami is describing different aspects of the Vrindavan landscape. And perhaps he's talking about the Vrindavan landscape in general, not so much when Krishna is present. And he describes one thing, how when the sky is overcast and full of clouds and perhaps even raining, you can sometimes see in different places of the world glowworms. Have you seen in your life glowworms? Yeah. And glowworms like little sparkling lights, like Christmas lights in the sky. So he explains that Kali Yuga is like the clouds and they cover the real luminaries, like the moon. They cover them, they blanket them out for us. And then these little glowworms start to go ding, 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 ding in the sky, and we think, wow, look at that, there's some light. So we shouldn't be so less intelligent, because this is Kali Yuga. Those great authorities are beyond the clouds. They are not moving. They could dissipate the clouds if it was their service to do so. But Kali Yuga means clouds. So we who are within the cloudy atmosphere of Kali Yuga should not become distracted by the glowworm-like so-called charismatic personalities of this world. And we should understand that way beyond there, and that's where I want to connect and go, are the real powerful personalities who have full faith in Krishna and who can give us that 1 second surrender and finish the whole lot. And that is the purpose of being a human being and having a human form of life. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You mentioned about the difference between Shaktivesha and Vibhuti.
Shaktivesha and Vibhuti, yes.
Now, what is indirect about being indirectly involved?
Indirect is the Vibhutis. Direct is the Shaktivesh, because they're directly being empowered by Krishna, by some Shakti for some particular purpose. Like we saw Srila Prabhupada, he walked on this planet. He 10 times circled the globe at a very late age, at a time when most people would be thinking of settling down and having a little bit of kind of stability and being taken care of by their family. and having a little bit of sort of protection and living in a nice temple somewhere, or chanting deeply, seriously in Vrindavan, doing something for their own growth and development spiritually. He left all of that and he circled the globe and he was fearless. He was fearless. He faced all kinds of people, and some of them were very arrogant, and some of them didn't respect him, and he didn't matter. He just faced them and went around and around with the Shakti of Krishna, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Nityananda Prabhu, to establish this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. And now there are so many branch outs of Krishna consciousness, so many different organizations who are here and there doing different things, even apart from ISKCON. And in the West, no one can say that we did not start our movement because Swami Prabhupada went 10 times around the globe. So this is a particular empowerment. That's direct Shakti. But the other things, the sun, the moon, and the other inert entities, they're also indirectly empowered by the Lord. And that's why they're said to be no different than him. Why is that the point? Indirect, because he's not there. His Shakti is there. Shakti Avesh. If I say to you, go up to my room and get my glasses. Here's the key. Just inside the door is the light. Turn on the light. And they're right next to the computer. And I give you the key. I empower you to go and do that service. But I remain here. But Krishna is so mysterious that his power and he are non-different. Whereas you and I are different. But that is the principle. That he empowers certain elements to work. Otherwise they wouldn't work. They're just inert matter. But he is not that. So he says, everything is resting on me. He says, I know all living entities, but me, no one knows. Because I'm the source of the creation. So he empowers. Is that what you were asking?
Maybe I put half, 50%. But when we talk about oceans, Mataji, then we also read elsewhere in Prabhupada's purport that the oceans, each of them have their own demigods. Who control,
yes.
Like Vayu controls
rain, yes. Yes.
So isn't that when something is being controlled by a demigod, then it is indirect empowerment, whereas when Krishna himself vests his energy into, let's say, Srila Prabhupada, for example, the preaching potency, then that becomes the Shakti Avesh, is it to be understood like that? Or?
Both, because Srila Prabhupada explains in different places that a very powerful, wealthy man, he's directly involved in everything in his business. But he's indirectly involved when he says, but he describes it as direct because it's his energy going through this man here, he's in charge of this, that one's doing this, that one's doing this. But he himself is directly and indirectly responsible for everything. So the demigods come from him. Fountainhead means everything comes from him. So the demigods come from him. So if the demigods then do something, it's all still, you can trace it back to him. But you could say indirectly to some degree that it's through the demigods. I don't think that would be incorrect. But you'd have to add to that that it's direct as well. Otherwise it appears that the demigods have been given something and now they have control over that and he has control over that. And when it's looked at like that, then one loses the fountainhead from one's understanding. Any other questions? Any points? Yes, Prem.
Could you describe some distinct moments that you remember with your interaction with Prabhupada?
With
Prabhupada? Any moment that you remember in your interaction with him?
I remember sitting here in this temple, and I sat there, and my husband sat there. And just in front of that pillar we had a chair and my father was sitting there. And my father was very elderly, he was in his late 70s and he wasn't very well. So I had brought him to the temple because he was very compliant. He didn't really understand very much of what was going on, but he was respectful to Srila Prabhupada and he was compliant. So he was sitting there and Srila Prabhupada was sitting there, And I had a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling because, of course, I felt closer in one way to my father as my father, but I felt closer in another way to Prabhupada as Prabhupada, and I was having to keep my intelligence allegiance to what Srila Prabhupada was saying. But inside I was sort of thinking to myself, what's my father thinking about what Prabhupada's saying? Because I had the emotional experience like that. And at a certain point in the lecture, Srila Prabhupada was talking and he explained that about how we are so bound in this world. We're so bound. And he said that just like a man, he will use his whole life to serve his family, and then at the end of his life, he will say to his wife and his family, I have given everything to serve you, now I want to go and become serious in my spiritual life. And she will say, no, you cannot do that, you cannot leave me. And he turned around and looked at my father. And his eyes went really big and he was really looking at him. And I just felt it, you know, I was sitting right beside, but I felt the intensity of his presentation to this person who was totally covered and old and, you know, infirmed and so on, going straight through all of that to the soul. The soul. He talked to the soul. Because he saw us as souls. He didn't see this. He saw our body like we see our clothes. Like I can say, oh, he's wearing dark blue, he's wearing brown. And when I'm talking to Jagannath Ram, I don't look at his jacket and say, oh, Jagannath Ram, you look beautiful today with your collar. And I talk to him. I look at his face. So Prabhupada looked at the soul. And my father, who was sitting on the seat, it was really striking. He opened his eyes a little higher because he was trying to stay awake, and he looked at Prabhupada back, and Prabhupada caught his eye, and my father just went. And I was sort of witnessing, watching this exchange between these two elderly gentlemen. And because you could never understand what was in Srila Prabhupada's mind. Because sometimes we think, oh, he's angry with me, or, oh, you know, he sees this about me, and so he said that about that. Because we're very self-conscious. So I was thinking, oh, it's because I don't come to the temple enough, and he's upset with my father, and on and on. And so the rest of the class was going on in my mind. I was struggling to listen, whereas my mind was going between this very powerful moment that nobody else noticed, because Prabhupada just did one of these. There it was. And so I said to my father afterwards, come with me. And I took him, he was hard at walking, and I took him out through the crowd because they were still paying attention to Srila Prabhupada. And I took him over to the round semicircle stairs going into Prabhupada's house. And on the way I grabbed some crimson rose petals, nice deep red rose petals. There was somewhere, and I took them and I said to him, here, stand here, and when he walks past, take those flowers and throw them like that. So he's standing there with his handful of rose petals in his hand, and Srila Prabhupada comes walking across, looking like kind of he's like walking on another strata or something, very gracefully, slowly walks across the courtyard. And then when he's just about to go up the stairs, my father threw the rose petals. And Srila Prabhupada looked at the rose petals, and then very slowly and graciously he looked up at my father. When he looked at my father, he said, and then he looked at me, and he said, oh. And he smiled, because now he wasn't delivering the message of the Bhagavatam. When he was delivering the message of the Bhagavatam, he was so grave. You just felt guilty. You just sat there feeling, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. But when he came out of the temple, he was very, very soft and very, very gentle. Because he meant not to give us trouble by his gravity. He meant to wake us up to the great treasure of Krishna Bhakti that is lying within each one of us. So when he saw my father standing there and I was standing there, he looked at me, he looked back at my father, and his eyes became very soft, and he said, oh, this is your father. And I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And he looked at my father for a minute, old and frail and almost to the end of this particular incarnation, and he put his hand on his shoulder like this, and he just gently patted him on the shoulder, and he said, "Thank you very much." And then he headed up the stairs, and my father again went, because he didn't really know what was going on. He was being directed by another. So just as my father didn't know what was going on, but he was doing wonderful things for him as a soul that would bring him good fortune in the future, so likewise we don't really know what's going on, but we're doing wonderful things by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada's directions. We're doing wonderful things that will bring us immense good fortune in the future. So please, everyone, be very patient with yourselves, but very determined as well. And don't accept the rubbish that your mind tells you you're supposed to accept, that's causing you not to be serious in your Krishna consciousness. And try to use this life really, really well in Krishna's service. Srila Prabhupada told me something that helped me enormously. He said, just give one life to Krishna. He said, he made a contract. He said, just this life, give this life to Krishna. And after that, we've had so many lives, we'll have more lives. After that, you can do whatever you want. So whenever my mind is playing up, I say, hang on, don't get so upset. It's just one life. But this life, we have to keep refocusing on this very important promise we made. This life is for Krishna. The next life, I can go to the movies and watch TV and do any silly thing I want. But this life is for Krishna. So don't do it now. Just wait a bit. So just like with a child, you tell them, just wait a few years. That's like telling them, just wait for eternity. They can't comprehend the extent of a few years. So likewise, Srila Prabhupada, treating us as children, said, just one life. Just give this one to Krishna. That means regulate yourself. As soon as you see, you get that feeling in the heart, I'm doing something, I've got that mundane kind of feeling again. Uh-oh, I've got it. Whoa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, I've got to get back on track. Whether it's happiness or distress, as soon as you can understand from within, Krishna from within will be saying to you, no, 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 move a little to the left, move a little to the right. So we must become submissive to that and move towards the direct process of surrendering to Krishna through serving the devotees and serving other people also. It's not that we don't glorify the value of Harinam, but we have to be in the right position before we do it. In the same way, would you like to have some heart surgery if the surgeon was drunk? Would you like that? So this is the responsible position that we're in. So we must remember that and carry that with us as much as we can, as much of the time as we can. All right, I think I should release you all so that you can continue with your day. Thank you.